Welcome to the podcast of this Brecan information session. Information sessions are recorded at the Brecan Resource Centre and can be borrowed in CD format from the Resource Library. Sessions are copyrighted and are for personal home use only. If you would like to know more about this and other sessions, please contact Brecan on 1300 781 500. We hope you enjoy this podcast.
This session was recorded on the 16th of April 2012 at the Brecan Resource Centre in the Queen Victoria Women's Centre, located in Melbourne CBD. Anyone can become really sick and be unable to tell doctors what type of medical care they want or don't want. Whether it's a sudden accident or a gradual worsening of an illness, it is important for families and friends to understand how we would like to be cared for in the event of being too sick to speak for ourselves. Advanced care planning is a series of steps we can take to express our wishes and preferences for our medical care, whether we are currently healthy or not. In this session, Catherine Kelly from Austin's Health Respecting Patients' Choices program explains advanced care planning further, including the role of medical power of attorney. We hope you enjoy this session.
I'll just give you a very quick rundown first while we're just getting ready to go and everyone's getting settled. Just to tell you where Respecting Patient Choices has come from. It was a program that was brought from America by the Austin, first come to Australia in about 2002-2003. It was at the Austin initially as about a 12-month pilot program, and since then it's become a national health initiative. It's been adopted by, throughout Victoria and other states in Australia in the public health sector, most of the public health sectors in the aged care sector and in the palliative care sector. There's been education programs, at least in Victoria, for general practitioners. And last year, in the middle of the year, the Austin started a community education program, and Marianne and I, we're both volunteers with that program, and that's how we became here today. We're volunteers with the program. We go out to talk to groups like progress clubs, we go to retirement homes, and we go to aged care facilities, and virtually anyone who wants to hear about advanced care planning will go and talk to you. So we're all about encouraging open discussion in the community about advanced care planning. Advanced care planning essentially talks about making your wishes known for the type of care, usually medical care, that you would like for yourself, usually at the end of life, or but not in other in some other circumstances. Say, for instance, you sustain an injury where you can't make your own decisions. So we're trying to encourage people to talk about a subject that we really don't want to talk about, but maybe understand that it's a subject that we should be talking about. So that's essentially what Respecting Patient Choices and Advanced Care Planning is about. Now, to start the presentation today, I'll get Marianne to start we've got a 15-minute DVD that I'd like you to watch, and that just talks about advanced care planning in different family situations, and puts it into a more practical context that we can sort of we can relate to a bit better. Then after that, I'll go through and I'll explain to you some of the more important issues with advanced care planning. Then we'll have a time for questions and answers at the end. We'll also give you a presentation feedback sheet, and we would appreciate your own feedback. Also, Brecan, I understand this is the first time that they've had this subject presented to you, so they've got the blue sheet attached to the front of our white sheet, and they'd like your feedback about the topic as well. On the our presentation feedback sheet also gives you the opportunity, if you would like, to leave your name and telephone number, so that we can give you a follow-up phone call in about 4 weeks' time after you've read the information in the pack that we give you all to take home today, because often extra questions sort of present themselves after you've read that information. And if you don't like asking questions in front of a whole lot of other people, it's sometimes good to have a sort of a one-to-one where you can ask questions and to see if we can sort of provide you with any other assistance at that time as well. So that'll be a 4-week follow-up. That's 4 weeks will follow-up with a phone call if you leave your name and telephone number, and we'd like that. Then we also give each of you a an information pack to take home with the reading material in it. And we'd suggest that you, if you have already appointed someone as your medical enduring power of attorney, that you might like to get another information pack and give it to them, or pass your information pack onto them as, to read as well. So we'll just start off with the DVD, and then we'll answer, we'll go through the other main points after that. Okay, now I was just going to say to you before Bud did it for me, that if you want to, if you'd like to watch that video again, or perhaps show some of your family that video, you can access it from the Respecting Patient Choices website, because it gives some good practical examples that I think are easy to relate to about advanced care plans. Now we'll just go through the main central parts of advanced care planning. A plan can be anything from a formal document down to quite casual sort of dot point notes, if you like. We would recommend to you that you do make it written in some form, because it's easier for your family, your power of attorney. It's easier for you when you go back to review your plan to go through and look at something that's written down, rather than sort of try and commit everything to memory. Your plan can be, as I said, your written wishes, plus the appointment of a substitute decision maker, which in Victoria is called a medical enduring power of attorney. Your advanced care plan is based on your own values. That's why it's such a personal plan. It's based on your cultural, your spiritual, and your personal values. There are lots of different cultures in Australia that all approach advanced care planning from maybe a slightly different slant than Anglo-Saxon based people. So we would the information we give you today is fairly generalist. So if you're from another culture, or you have a firm religious or spiritual background, we would rely on you to get whatever information you need to interpret advanced care planning in a way that is appropriate and comfortable for you. Not everybody approaches it the same way. Who should do an advanced care plan? Ideally, everyone over 18 should. Particularly important for people with chronic medical conditions. And also, if you have firm ideas about what you wish concerning specific medical interventions, and any person intending to appoint a medical power of attorney. Now, it's helpful to complete an advanced care plan, because it gives your family a clear guide of the type of care that you would wish for yourself. And it also states on it who your medical enduring power of attorney is, which is a vital piece of information that should you be admitted to hospital at that stage of your life, that one of the first questions people will be asking is, who is your medical power of attorney? An advanced care plan is used only when you reach a stage where you are either too ill, or you have lost the confidence to participate in your own decision making. It's not used at any other time. It's only used when you reach that stage in your life, when you are too ill, or you have lost the confidence to make decisions and participate in your own care plan. Who do I talk to about my plan? Okay, people that you trust. They be close family and friends, your GP and your other treating medical specialists, and your substitute decision maker. Your substitute decision maker, or your medical power of attorney, is the person who needs to go through this thought process with you and to take part in any discussions you have about your the type of care you prefer for yourself. In Victoria, and I'm only talking about Victoria now because there are still slight inconsistencies within other states within Australia. So in Victoria, your substitute decision maker is known as your medical enduring power of attorney. Your medical enduring power of attorney document is a legal document. It allows someone that you trust implicitly to make medical decisions on your behalf. They can consent to, refuse, or withdraw treatment on your behalf. Okay, and I didn't realise that I'd done this again. But a family member or your next of kin who is not appointed as your medical enduring power of attorney can only consent to treatment for you. So there is a very big difference, and there is a very big difference between appointing someone as your medical enduring power of attorney and not appointing someone and relying on your family to be able to state what your wishes are. Whom should I choose as your medical enduring power of attorney? They need to be over 18 years of age. They need to be competent to make decisions, that goes without saying. They need to be someone that you really trust. They need to be good under stress. It's no good someone who goes into a hospital and they sort of, their knees turn to jelly. They're not the type of person that you would appoint as your medical enduring power of attorney, because they have to be used to asking questions to get the answers that they need to make decisions for you. They have to understand the role and they have to agree to perform that role. A lot of people we hear go along to their solicitor to have their wills done, and he sort of appoints someone as your financial and power of attorney, and then he appoints somebody maybe as your medical power of attorney, and they really don't have any say in that. They have to understand the role and they need to agree to perform that role for you. And they have to be involved in all your advanced care planning discussions. Do I need a lawyer? No, you don't, because the written part, your wish list for your future care, for the care you would like for yourself, is not a legal document itself. Your appointment of an enduring power of attorney for your medical wishes, that is the legal part. Okay, so you don't need, in Victoria, your advanced care plan is underpinned by the Medical Treatment Act that was passed in 1988, and that gave each competent adult the right to refuse medical treatment and also the right to appoint a substitute decision maker for you. So that's the underpinnings of the care plan itself. And you need to you don't need a lawyer, but you would need to obtain assistance from one of your doctors that you feel comfortable with having several conversations with, or with an advanced care planning clinician. The advanced care planning is based on respect for each of our personal autonomy. Okay, since the 1950s, 1960s, before we had what we call life-prolonging treatments available, there's been a huge shift in thinking. People are willing to, or medical people are more and more being, they've got a long way to go, but they are more and more being showing that there is a willingness to listen to what our wishes are. And since we've had the life-prolonging procedures like CPR, mechanical ventilation, and other life-saving procedures, it's become apparent that not everybody wants those. So that's where the willingness to listen to what our wishes really are for our own care. Can I change my advanced care plan? Yes, you can. Okay, and you would need to pass within your advanced care plan a part of having an advanced care plan. You don't want to write down your wishes 10 years ago and not take it out and review it in the meantime. You can modify your advanced care plan or your enduring power of attorney if any circumstances change. your health situation might change, your social circumstances might change, your enduring power of attorney might become unavailable for or unsuitable for any reasons. So for any reason at all, you can change your advance care plan.
Yep.
No, it doesn't. In the information pack that we give you today, there is a double-sided sheet of paper, which is the paper that you need to complete for your medical enduring power of attorney. The legal part of that is to have it witnessed appropriately by someone who can witness statutory declarations. The easiest person to access for that is your pharmacist. You can go to the police station, you can get your postmaster to do it, but all you need to do is withdraw your other powers of attorney, discard them, and do the form again and get it witnessed appropriately. Okay, what do I do with my advance care plan once it's completed? Now you keep the original, and you need to give certified copies to your medical enduring power of attorney, to any close friends or family that you think it is appropriate to that they have a copy, your GP and your other treating specialists, and your local hospital. It might not be the Austin where we come from, but your other public hospitals that you go to, or your your private hospitals as well, and if you are in a residential care home, that they have a copy as well.
So do you have to give them to each other?
Yes, you do. Yeah. You give them to your friends basically if they're close friends and you think that they would want to know the care that you've chosen for yourself. Okay, you don't give them to people who really don't have a close relationship with you. Now what happens if I don't have an advance care plan? Medical staff will treat you, okay, but it might mean that you end up having treatment that you don't really want. Family will also make decisions on what they believe you want, but unless, as part of your advanced care planning process, you need to take your family along for the journey as well, and make sure that they understand what your wishes are. They don't necessarily have to agree with them, because essentially it's not about them, it's about you and the personal decisions you make for yourself. So you are asking them to respect your wishes. That's what you're asking. They don't necessarily have to agree, but it's great if you're all on the same tram and they do agree with them. But you are asking them to respect your wishes. So it may mean in the end that if you haven't made your wishes known to anyone, that you receive medical treatment that you wouldn't want.
So Catherine, I'm not sure you may be going on to this, but can you give some examples of what sort of treatment people may not want?
Okay, this depends on... The list of treatments is very long. It really depends on... It doesn't matter what treatment the person beside you is getting, or the person on the other side of you. It depends on the treatment that is relative to you with your health condition. Okay, it doesn't depend on anybody else's. So that's why talking to I think Wendy was saying that you are all a fairly savvy group, and they're used to getting onto Google and sort of Googling and getting a lot of information themselves. But you also need to talk to one of your treating doctors, somebody that you feel comfortable with having a conversation with. He knows your health situation, and I know most of you have had a fairly torturous health situation getting here today. You need to talk to one of your medical practitioners who can give you an idea about what may be the options for you further down the track. And then you look at those options, and he or she will also be able to advise you on the type of medical interventions available. So it's a very personal thing. It's not a sort of a big box of sort of medical interventions, and you just sort of look at different ones. It's very much related to your own health situation. So that's why you need to get objective information to weigh up options for yourself and make decisions. Alright, so where can I get more information? The Respecting Patient Choices program is run in Austin Health, Northern Health and Eastern Health. If you want any other additional information, you can also access the website, and the Public Advocate's Office here in Melbourne has a very good over-the-phone question and answer. They're quite helpful. If you need any extra help, you can also always ring the Respecting Patient Choices office at the Austin Hospital, and they may be able to help you, or they may be able to redirect you to somebody more appropriate in the hospital that you attend.
I'm sorry,
going
back to that one, there's no Southern Health there.
No, is Southern Health part of it?
Yes, Southern Health.
Yes, okay.
I think because that slide was more when we talked to people out in Heidelberg and out that way. So yes, Southern Health is a bit too low.
But if you were unsure, you could ring the Austin Respecting Patient Choices office, and they would let you know where to. They would redirect you to the hospital where you attend if they had people there who could. Assist you. Yeah.
You talk about the program being run, say, out of the office, but if you lodged your plan with the office and you turned up an emergency down the track, how do you know that your plan has been picked up?
You're talking about if you've lodged it at the office?
Yeah.
They have a particular way of treating advanced care planning in with their documentation system. They scan the original document, give that back to you, and put the scanned copy in your medical record, and they flag that on their computer system. Now, other hospitals may have different ways of handling it, but you would also, if you were at that stage where you may need to use your advanced care plan, your medical power of attorney person would also have a copy, and if you were at that stage, they would presumably be in the hospital with you or well aware that you were in hospital and would be coming in and sort of making sure that the staff knew that you were the appointed power of attorney.
So you can't just rely on the flag being picked up in the hospital?
Necessarily. I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. The advanced care plan is not a hospital-owned document. It is owned by the person who drew it up. Okay, so really it's in your best interest to come in waiving your advanced care plan and your medical enduring appointment and making sure that people know that they are both in place. Yeah.
Yes, I don't know if my question's on track, but I was thinking that, you know, if part of your plan is not to be resuscitated, for instance, and perhaps if you go out for lunch one day and you choke and the ambulance takes 20 minutes to get to you and you don't want to be resuscitated and they are doing everything to resuscitate you, what's your advanced care plan going to do?
Okay.
What good is
currently, the ambulance service are obligated to start resuscitation. When you get to hospital, if your medical enduring power of attorney is present, they are able to ask that treatment is withdrawn because they know from what you told them that this is not what you want. They are able to ask that treatment is withdrawn. But as I pointed out, a properly appointed power of attorney is able to ask that. A next of kin family member, next of kin who is not an appointed power of attorney, can only consent to treatment for you. Yeah. So, I mean, further down the track, in an ideal world, we might be able to have, you know, similar to a, you know, a wristband or something other like that, but we're not there yet. But the ambulance service are obligated to start resuscitation. Yeah. Okay. Now, what can I do now? Talk to your close friends, talk to your close family and friends. Think about who you would choose as your appointed substitute decision maker. Some of you may have already appointed somebody, but don't confuse it with a medical power of attorney, because the powers of both of them are quite different. You can still have the one person be your financial power of attorney and your medical power of attorney, but they must be separately appointed. Okay? Talk to your GP and medical specialist, but I think I would do that after I've done a lot of thinking about your wishes yourself, and get, because usually when you go to your doctor, and even when you go to your medical specialist, you're in there and you're trying to be sort of focused to get the most out of your the most out of your appointment. So come in there having done a lot of thinking about it yourself, so that hopefully you've got specific questions to ask to get the sort of the most out of them. Complete both a written advance care plan and the forms to appoint someone as your medical enduring power of attorney. In the information pack we give you today, there's also a formal document that you can use that's called the Statement of Choices. And that's only a double-sided one sheet of paper as well, the same as your enduring power of attorney. Give copies to everyone who's involved in your care that you think does need a copy. I'd also recommend that you maybe think about, if you have appointed someone already as your power of attorney, or you're going to appoint somebody as your power of attorney, that they might be interested in reading the information in the pack that we give you today. So if you'd like to get an extra pack, see us, because I think we bought some extra, and we can certainly get an extra pack sent to you if you would like that. And think about also whether you want to leave your name and phone number, just for a follow-up call in about 3 or 4 weeks after we've had time to read the information. So I think that's the end. Okay, yes. I think you're first.
Yeah. The power of attorney, is it a single person or can you have two?
No, you can appoint two people, but only the first one is the one that is active. The second person that you appoint only comes into action if your first one is can't be located or is unavailable, say they're off travelling somewhere. Yeah, so you can appoint two, but only one power of attorney can act for you. Yeah, now.
You talked about a financial power of attorney, a medical power of attorney. What about just the straight legal power of attorney?
The straight legal power of attorney doesn't cover your medical issues at all. That covers day-to-day life stuff. Say if you go overseas for a while and you want someone to look after your business interests, pay your bills here, a general power of attorney can do that. It is not an enduring power of attorney, so once you lose confidence to make decisions, that power of attorney no longer exists. An enduring power of attorney, like your financial and like your medical one, carries on after you lose confidence. So they act for you when you can't. Yeah. So that's the essential difference between a regular power of attorney and an enduring power of attorney. Yeah, now.
Do people appoint professionals? Is there medical? Or do they just appoint family or friends?
What sort of professionals are you thinking of?
Well, the GP. Would they be willing to do it or would they not?
I would say probably not, unless they have as a professional person, your GPs probably, at a guess, have that many other things going on with their life that time-wise they probably wouldn't, unless you had a special personal relationship with a GP. But the generally, GPs don't do it, no.
So most, all the time, it's usually family or friends?
It's usually, yes, close friends, close family, and it doesn't have to be your husbands or wives, it can be your grandchildren. If you want to, if you've got a special relationship with a grandchild, grandson, granddaughter, you can do that. Nieces or nephews, someone that you have a close relationship with you, and there is an understanding between the two of you that you trust them and that they understand what they're being asked to do, and that it's not about them, it's about you, and speaking for your wishes.
You need to have that conversation with you, especially if you wanted someone who had very different views to you.
But they have,
if you didn't have that conversation, then there could be a conflict.
And that goes to the importance of picking the right person to appoint as your medical enduring power of attorney. Apart from writing specific wishes down on paper, part of your advanced care plan also extends over a number of years to, in conversation, let them know the things that you value, the goals that you want to achieve in life, so that, say, you get to the situation where you're no longer, for whatever reason, able to make or participate in your decisions, and an issue that you haven't spoken about or were unaware of comes up, you would hope that you have prepared them well enough by what you told them for them to be able to make the decision that they would believe you would make in those circumstances. So it doesn't just stop at writing down instructions, it continues on, and it's a continuing process that you go through with your medical power of attorney to let them know so that they're on the same track that you are, essentially. So are there any other... We might be about the feedback sheet.
Do you think it would be a good idea maybe for Pat to come and...
Yeah. All right.
We have Lady Pat who's going to come and just tell us about her experience of completing the father's care plan.
I just have a question. In the situation, the medical team is saying this should be done.
Mm-hmm.
How can this power of attorney person actually overrule the doctors the same?
They're not overruling it. A lot of your power of attorney depends so much on how well you can prepare them to act on your behalf when you can't. And they would have a conversation with the medical team and say what you're proposing. They would have a conversation with the medical team and say, what is the advantage? What is the likely outcome to be? Or they could say to them, this is not in line with your wishes. So they would have a conversation. It's not a matter of sort of just fronting up to them and saying no. They would have a conversation with the medical team and find out what the likely outcome is to be, what the expected outcome is to be, whether that outcome is in line with what you would want, or the treatment that's being offered is definitely something that you wouldn't want. So it's an ongoing, evolving process. Yeah. So your preparation of your medical enduring power of attorney is critical. And that's why it needs to extend far more than what you write down on any document.
When it comes to the point, the medical power of attorney says, understands all this and says, this is what I know, what my friend or whatever wants.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand really how that she can actually make that decision with the medical team proposing a certain...
If she's saying this is something you would not want, because the appointment of a medical enduring power of attorney is a legal process, and I need to let you know that this hasn't been tested at law yet, but the medical enduring power process is a legal process. So if they are, if the medical fraternity are intent on going along with a treatment that you know is not what you wanted, and I think there is a process they can you can lodge with VCAT, although you would hope that you wouldn't get to that. You wouldn't get to that stage. There is a process that you can go through, but you would have been having conversations with the medical team to work out what the outcome is, and whether that's in line with what the person would have wanted, or you know from the onset that what they're proposing is definitely not what they would have wanted. Yeah.
And that person would have to show documents to the medical team?
If you have a written statement of choices that you can show to the medical team, that carries a little bit more weight than something that you have in your head. But you've got you are backed up by the Medical Treatment Act, which allows people to appoint a medical enduring power of attorney, a substitute decision maker for you, and you're also backed up by the Medical Treatment Act, which allows a competent person in Victoria to refuse medical treatments that they do not want.
Do you have anything else to add?
Not really, no.
No, it's not.
I think you can see it's pretty tricky.
Yeah, really, very.
I think this is a really good process, but it doesn't clear all the things. And it's a lot of emphasis on the medical power. I was diagnosed with breast cancer about 20 years ago. So that's a good news statement, and it's never returned. However, I then got other cancers in the meantime, and I've had 18 months of chemo. So again, that's good news because I look over the window. And the last cancer is endometrial cancer, and it had got into the lymphatic system, so I'm considered to be terminal. However, that was 8 years ago, the diagnosis, so I'm defying the odds. I have very little treatment. I have tablets, progesterone, which when he gave it to me, the specialist said, the oncologist said, this works for some people and not for others. I said, great. Why? And he said, we don't know. So it's all tricky, but there are some good news things too. When I got the last reoccurrence, which was 2004, I did some very serious thinking. I've always been a person who wanted to make my own decisions, far too independently minded according to some people. But I thought that was one reason, but the other reason was I've got a family of two boys and a husband. Ever since my original diagnosis, my husband has been in complete denial that I have any problem. I'm cured. And if you look at me, it looks as though I am cured. I can't have conversations with him about my cancer, and I don't think this is unusual. I think the more intimate you are with the person, the less they're able to cope with discussions about maybe you'll die, maybe you'll die soon. So I had that as a problem. When I decided to make the document, and I'll read it out to you in a moment, I didn't want my family to have that burden of making decisions for me, given that I had a terminal prognosis. So I made the document with a lot of help, and I discussed it with all my family members. Firstly with my husband, who burst into tears. Secondly with my younger son, who was at that stage 38, who burst into tears, and then with my older son, who was just slightly old, a couple of years older, who said, gosh, Mum, that's a great idea. That's a terrific thing to do. Now, you can imagine that family deciding when to take me off life support. It would have been so fractious, so difficult for them, and it would have been an enduring thing. Why did you say that? Why didn't you? So after I'd made the document, I felt a huge burden had been lifted off my shoulders.
it seems macabre to discuss these things. You know, discuss death, discuss dying, discuss pain. But I really felt that burden was taken away as soon as I made that document, informed my family. And in my case, I had to appoint two agents, not a medical power of attorney. And they had to sign documents and so forth and have them notified, have them registered.
How do you mean agents?
They were called agents, two agents. Mm. Now, this is 2004, and it's a different, it's Eastern Health.
Same thing, different terminology.
Mm.
They've changed the terminology.
So they'd have the same standing as a medical card. Okay, and look, sometimes when you have to explain your position and your values and how you feel about things to other people, it clarifies a lot in your own mind. And just hearing yourself go through it, instead of just all the thoughts in here, but having to explicate, having to explain what you feel, what you want to happen, I think is a very good thought process and a very good reaching out to people. I don't know about you, but I've got several friends who avoid the topic of cancer with me because they get embarrassed. They don't know what to say. I have friends who have had cancer or have cancer, and we can talk quite freely. You see the difference?
Mm.
They've been where I've been. They are where I am. Now, I think the more you can go through it, think about it, for me, the less the fear is there. That doesn't work with everybody, I know. But for me, the fear has evaporated. It's still there in the dark of the night, but it's not a big black shadow. I suppose because I've faced it anyway.
I'll just read out the one that I've done. It's very short and quite sort of simple, actually.
And listening to you today, I thought probably too simple.
Probably should have put a whole lot of other things in it. And I will review it.
Mm.
So this is all it is. Page. Advanced care plan, statement of choices, my name, full name, and my address. I am a sound mind and understand the importance of this document. I request that my stated choices are respected by my doctors and family now and in the future, and by my appointed agents. In addition, I request that all the above people pay heed to my beliefs and values in life. I have appointed, and I give the name and address of the person as my agent, and it happens to be my cousin. I thought a lot about this. I didn't want my family to have that responsibility. She is a very pragmatic, very determined person, and I think she'd be a match for anyone who wanted to not give her point of view. If I reach a point where it is reasonably certain, look at the language, reasonably certain, that I will not recover my ability to interact meaningfully with myself, my family, and environment, and as my medical condition has been diagnosed as terminal cancer, in the event of my having a cardiac or respiratory arrest, I do not wish on the line to have cardiopulmonary resuscitation initiated. Nor do I wish, underlined, to have artificial means of life support initiated, including intubation and artificial nutrition and hydration. Antibiotics should not be administered to me to reduce pain and antibiotics should only be administered to me to reduce pain and discomfort, not to prolong life. That's tricky. Pain care management is my priority, and I trust the relevant medical staff to keep me as pain-free, clean, and comfortable to the end of my life as they are able
within the context of my wishes as stated above. As regards hospitalisation, my goal is to remain at home with the appropriate nursing care support for as long as possible, then to be taken to a hospice when my doctors deem it necessary. A lot of people want to die at home. That's not my choice. The reason being, I think there's too much stress on the family, and they're concerned that they're giving enough pain management, etc., etc. Although I was brought up a Roman Catholic, I do not hold any religious beliefs and do not want the ministrations of a priest or minister, either in hospital or at my funeral. To my family members, I wish them to know that I strongly believe that not initiating life-prolonging treatment in the case of incurable cancer is a loving and reasonable action, and that the above outline of my care is my deepest wish, written in the full knowledge of its implications and its sign and dated witness. So it's quite short. And I don't know if I've covered it.
No,
but I think the intentions are clear. And that's really all you can do.
Especially like the last bit where you say that, you know, you're reiterating that these are my wishes, and if, you know, you're sort of making it a lot easier for them to absorb having to make difficult decisions.
Yes.
Did you think of that?
Absolutely.
You thought of
absolutely. That? And we've just reinforced by when I showed it to them, and I got those startlingly different reactions. I must have sort of intuitively understood that that might happen. But, yes, I did reiterate because I wanted them to feel that I had taken the responsibility. I had discussed it with them. It was a fait accompli. There will be problems. It is tricky, but I've done the best I can. On their behalf as well as on mine.
I don't think that's simple. I think that really covers
everything. It covers all different areas.
Well, I had a booklet, and I went through that very, very carefully, and chose what I needed to say, and then put in my own words.
Yeah, I think you've got it.
Good.
Very helpful.
Any questions? Yes.
I think it's very nice, but I feel you've been a little harsher on yourself.
Yeah?
Because you said that I wouldn't want this, this, and this, which is, I respect your decision.
Yes.
What if it gave you an extra chance? What if it gave you more time with your family? Have you considered that? Why have you been so harsh to yourself?
I don't think I've been harsh to myself.
I'm sorry,
No. I think it's a very important question, actually.
I'm thinking if I was to make that decision, wouldn't I be being harsh with myself?
I think everybody will answer that question differently. For me, quality of life is absolutely the key issue for me. I do not want to... In fact, it comes up to something we did recently called survivorship. And at that meeting where I was talking, and it was health professionals there, I said, I think survivorship is a really bad word. It gives the impression that you're hanging on by the thread. And I don't want to survive, I want to thrive. And when I finish thriving, that's it. I don't want to just linger. For my own sake as well as my family's and friends. So that's my answer. It's not yours. That's fine. Yes.
Can I add something there? What you're demonstrating is what you're going to use the document for, just as for someone else to write that document, if I was, for example. In that middle section, you might be saying things like, I would like all treatment available so that I can have as long a time as I like. You use the document to support whatever your views and issues are. And it works equally well on that side as well, to say that under any condition, I'm more than happy to to undergo any treatment or prolonging care or whatever if it gives me that extra week, that extra day, and then before we end up with the family. So you use the same doctors, yes, but for your own purposes. Mm.
Mm. And this happens because, you know, people expecting the first grandchild or great grandchild,
mm,
and they
want
to hang, on, hang, mm, on for that thing. Mm. So that's that person, that's not me. Mm.
Mm.
You know, I want to thrive. And when I can't thrive,
because I'm thinking more about you, as a more about you, because as a human being, it's just sad to me.
Oh, it's
you want your people to have more time, and it may not be lingering as easily. It might be at a quality that you would have thought. Those are the thoughts that are going in my head.
But then my medical power of attorney. Yeah. I've had those discussions with other person, and they know very precisely what I consider to be a reasonable way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And they also know pretty precisely what I don't consider a reasonable way to live, and it's not lying in a hospital bed with a shampoo.
That's
personal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And chance for that document needing to be used,
mm-hmm,
aren't great. You may well be making your own decision.
Mm, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Just adjusting.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so it's intensely personal, and that's why we're all respecting patients.
Yes.
Respecting each other for differences and priorities and.
Yeah, sorry, I hope I didn't say something.
No,
I've got several layers.
Thank you so much.
Sorry.
Just to say, I think also that Pat has kind of defined what she considers the life that she wants to continue with and the level to which she's happy to not continue. So I think there's been defined in that as well.
And remember, you know, age comes into this.
Mm.
If I were a 33-year-old woman, I wouldn't be writing this sort of document.
Mm.
And when I was having chemo, what saddened me most of all was the young women in that situation. And I thought I've had a full, rich, wonderful life.
Mm.
So I'm prepared to give it up. But would they be?
Mm.
Well, I don't know, but it would be so much harder.
Mm.
So much.
Mm.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It's fine. It's free. I don't know how appropriate it is, but if you wanted to copy, that's fine with me. It's not a public document, but it's not a very private one either.
Can I just make one distinction, going back to the lady who talked about choking over lunch and not being wanting to be resuscitated? I made a distinction between that circumstance where I probably would want to be resuscitated as opposed to, you know, succumbing to my disease and not really being worth resuscitating.
That's why it's in here that I have terminal cancer.
Yeah, well, they talk about the thing about a reasonable outcome.
Yes.
Aggressive medical treatment lead to a reasonable outcome.
Yes.
But then also, the thing is, if you don't want to be resuscitated, no matter what causes your cardiac arrest, you can actually ensure that doesn't happen by having a refusal treatment certificate.
Yes.
Another.
Mine was more the scenario that if I've made this document, I've got all my plan and all, and you know, then that's a blockage.
Right. You don't have it in your head.
I'm sure they make that distinction.
Sorry, Pat. There's lots of scenarios like. That people have their advance care plan on the fridge, or they have their refusal of treatment certificate on the fridge, so when the ambos come, they'll look on the fridge. And it happens more, like they were saying the other day, that it happens more in country towns where people know each other more, and it's more elderly people that they won't come and vigorously resuscitate someone, you know, if they know or they've got it stuck to the fridge. But your scenario is the most difficult, and there really is no answer.
Yeah.
I mean, when you said if it takes the ambulance 20 minutes to come, then I thought, I wouldn't want to be resuscitated either. Then it's that period of time. And certainly there's no straight answer or no reassuring.
And you know, it's very deceptive. I went to see a friend in hospital several years ago who had a stroke. and I've been very close friends with his wife, very kindly said he wanted to go and say goodbye to people, and I did. He was lying in bed, he had pink cheeks, he was, he looked fantastic. He didn't look as though he was dying, but his brain stem was dead. And that family with two teenage children had to make the decision to cut off the life of that person who looked fully alive, was not marred in any way. And I just thought, how difficult for them. And they're still unhappy about it. So you want to save them from that, don't you?
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can subscribe to Brecan Podcasts or browse existing podcasts by visiting www.brecan.org.au.